Good day to you. My name is Father Josiah, and what you are about to listen to are two interviews that were conducted very recently between myself and the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, Barry Lynn. As most of you know, the city of Riverside has been locked in a very sad controversy since August 28th, when Americans United for the Separation of Church and State sent a letter accusing our mayor and city council and the city of Riverside of violating the Constitution for the last half century by being faithful to a promise that the city made to the Frank Miller family when we were given Mount Rubidoux to be a public park with a beautiful cross, the Sarah Cross, on top of it. Americans United is accusing us of violating the non-establishment clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution and is claiming that the cross is a clear attempt by our city to proselytize for Christianity and to make non-Christians feel like second-class citizens. Of course, this is all news to our government and also to our citizens who have never perceived the Sarah Cross in any such fashion. In November, the Riverside Press Enterprise published the letter of Americans United, and our city council had a city council meeting at which the city staff recommended that the land be sold. And since then, our city has been locked in a deep time of reflection and consideration on what should be done. This last week, I received a phone call from Barry Lynn, the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, asking if I would be interviewed. I agreed to that, and I asked Barry if he would agree to return the favor and be interviewed on my Arena podcast on Ancient Faith Radio, and he agreed. And so what you're about to hear is first his interview of me on his program Culture Shocks, and then my interview of him on my Arena podcast on Ancient Faith Radio. God bless the listening, and God help us to a good resolution to this controversy.
All right, and welcome to today's edition of Culture Shocks. This is Barry Lynn. Controversy in Riverside, California. But don't worry, even if you're not listening to this show in Riverside, California, do not fear. The controversy I'm about to discuss is flaring up all over the country, one modification or another. And this is over an object referred to as the Mount Rubidoux Cross. There's been a cross on a mountain in Riverside, California since 1907. The current version in steel and concrete, erected in 1963, after the owner of the property gifted this piece of land to the city for use as a public park. Now, it will not come as a surprise to longtime listeners of this show that I believe that once a government body owns a piece of land, that it cannot then construct or even maintain a religious icon there. And any cross that looks like this is a religious icon as far as I'm concerned. Indeed, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, one of the sponsors of this program, has sent a letter asserting that this cross violates the First Amendment. My first guest says, I am dead wrong, and in fact, he's willing to bear another kind of cross in order to save this one. He is Father Josiah Trenum, pastor at the St. Andrew Orthodox Church. Father Josiah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Barry. I'm happy to be with you.
You've tried to get local groups to work together to preserve this cross, but you've told local media that if that fails, you'd be willing to chain yourself to the cross to prevent its removal. How would that end for you?
Oh, perhaps not well. Perhaps not well. But I'm hoping that won't come to that, Barry.
Is this the kind of thing that's so important that you should act in a prophetic capacity within your church? You commit civil disobedience over this. I mean, this is not exactly, is it, a sit-in at a counter that won't serve African Americans in the South in 1960? This isn't like that, is it?
Well, you know, one of the greatest Orthodox leaders in this country, Archbishop Yakovos, chose, in fact, to walk with Martin Luther King, and we have a fine tradition of civil disobedience. This is, I think, in my mind, very serious. It's part of an aggressive promotion of a secular vision of American life that should not be welcomed by people of faith in our nation. And I think it's very important. I really think it's a form of special interest bullying. Maybe I might even call it, as some have, judicial terrorism. And if a pastor won't stand up against it, I mean, who will, Barry?
Well, one thing is whether anybody should be standing up about it. I mean, is this, in the sense of moral outrage that you have about this, is there anything that's happened in Riverside, California lately that compares by your standard of ethical judgment to this effort to potentially start a lawsuit or have this item removed? I mean, is this the biggest thing that's going on in Riverside from a moral standpoint?
Well, the believers in this town are the great majority, and they're involved in many efforts to try to support basic morality and try to help people in need. That's happening all over the place. We're a very peaceful city. But this cross that you're mentioning, what we call here the Sarah Cross, is a center point for our city and is an extremely important historical and cultural landmark. And if it goes, Barry, if it goes, many Riversideans are left thinking, what's next? What part of our history are we going to excise to appease a group's special understanding of the First Amendment?
Yeah, but Father Josiah, this is, I mean, I know you and perhaps lawyers that represent your point of view also would say, yeah, this is an historical figure. It's important in the community. But don't you, I mean, the cross is a quintessential symbol, not just generic symbol. It is a symbol of Christianity, of the central symbol of the faith, the crucifixion and then later the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Why is this being relegated in your mind and in the minds of plenty of people whose emails I've read in the last few weeks? They act like this is just about history. It's about religion, isn't it?
Yes and no. There is no question that the cross has religious significance and that it is the central symbol of the Christian faith. But it's about a lot more than that. And the attempt to separate completely religion and history, religion and culture, and religion and politics is a vain quest. This doesn't just have a religious significance. It also has a deep historical and cultural significance.
Well, I presume that there are people in Riverside who are not Christians, Orthodox or otherwise. If they see this on a piece of public land, don't you think it'd be reasonable for them to say, you know, I guess if you really want to get in good with the government of Riverside, however that's constituted, it'd be good to follow that cross. I mean, it looks like that's the symbol of the city. And in fact, what you just said, Father, suggests that you believe that. This is the symbolic entity that sums up what it is to live in Riverside.
I would take issue with what you just said, Barry. What I affirmed is that it is not less than a religious symbol, but that it's much more than a religious symbol. And I would say in this case, it's even primarily a historical and cultural cross that is put there. Remember, it was put there by a man who was one of the patriarchs of our town, Frank Miller, the founder of the Mission Inn, who himself was a Congregationalist, but he dedicated it to a Franciscan priest, Father Junipero Serra, who had such an important impact upon this area. I mean, that kind of history is codified in the names of our cities throughout this state, in our street names. Half the street names in Riverside are Catholic saints. Are we going to get rid of them too? I mean, the city supports the cleanliness and the maintenance of those signs.
Yep.
It's history, Barry.
Yeah, but this is a kind of a different kind of history, isn't it? I mean, this is such a special place that you and many in the community, I understand this, literally are willing to commit civil disobedience about it. Why, as an alternative, don't you do? I talked to a pastor a few years ago in Boise, Idaho. They had purchased a controversial Ten Commandments monument that had been on public grounds. They bought it. They put it in front of their Episcopal church in that case. I talked to the guy. He said, you know, one advantage of doing it this way is even more people see it. We can promote it any way we want because this is important to our faith. Why don't you or your church simply purchase this, have the concrete base removed, and take it somewhere else? Then we wouldn't have any fuss at all.
And in fact, we would bow down then to your requests and AU's request, and then what would come next? So on principle, we're opposed to doing that. If in fact you do file litigation against our city, if in fact our city chooses not to fight it or fights it and loses it, probably what you're describing is what's going to happen. We'll make the best of a bad situation. But I think that would be adding to already very unfortunate precedents in this area.
What are these folks that are living there who are not of the Christian faith? I mean, I know you, no one can, I mean, I'm sure that there are people of a Jewish faith and culture, and maybe there's an atheist who'd even say, I don't care what this is, it doesn't bother me. But you know, it's got to represent the Christian worldview as you yourself understand it. And some people are going to feel left out. They're going to feel like they don't even belong in Riverside. They ought to move somewhere else.
You know, Barry, I think the great irony of this current controversy between Americans United and the city of Riverside is really that Americans United is using the non-establishment clause of the First Amendment, which was designed to keep religious controversies from happening. And in fact, by using it improperly, in my opinion, they're actually provoking a religious controversy where no religious controversy exists. At the city council meeting, immediately after the public revelation of AU's letter, there were hundreds, perhaps 500 people there. One of the most articulate spokesmen before the city council to keep the cross unmolested was a Jew who said that he loves to see the cross and he doesn't want it touched.
Okay, but
just last week, Barry, I had an atheist come to my office here at the parish
No,
who told me he doesn't want to touch it.
I understand that, but you also know, even though it was a small minority, there were people who said it ought to go, and that's what makes for a difference in the community and what's going to continue this battle. I thank you for joining us on the show, and we'll see how all of this plays out. That's Father Josiah Trenum out in Riverside, California. We'll be back for more on Culture Shocks.
It's a real pleasure to be able to interview today on the arena the Reverend Barry Lynn, Esquire. Barry has been the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State since 1992. He's also an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ and a prominent leader of the American religious left, and a strong advocate in American life for the separation of church and state. My occasion for interacting with Barry was his show, which is called Culture Shocks, which can be heard on 1160 AM in DC and on stations throughout the nation. Barry, thanks for making time to talk to us.
Happy to do it, Father Josiah. Happy to do it.
Well, the occasion for our initial conversation, Barry, was the controversy surrounding the Sarah Cross on top of Mount Rubidoux in Riverside and Americans United, their letter to our mayor and city council of August 28th, insisting that the maintenance of the cross on the mountain is a breach of the United States Constitution, and threatening litigation if something isn't done to fix the situation. I'd like to get into that question and ask you more about what's really fueling the desire and the motivation of AU in just a second. If I could first just ask a larger question. Would you agree with this statement? And if not, please help me get the nuance correct. To my understanding, the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State is known for its zealous promotion of a strict, one might call the separationist teaching on church-state relations, championing almost an exclusively secular polity in which religious influences are systematically removed, sometimes even coercively by litigation from public life or from any public endorsement. Is that a fair description of AU?
I have to say it's not, frankly, because I think what we try to do is to maintain a decent distance between the institutions of government and those of religion, because we believe that in the long run, this enhances the role of government, meaning government does not have to pick and choose winners and losers, favorites and non-favorites among religions, but it also protects religion, because whenever the government comes to your church and says, I want to help you, is usually the time, in my experience, that the church ought to start running in precisely the opposite direction. I think it preserves the integrity of both to keep a fine, as Jefferson called it, wall of separation. Roger Williams called it a hedge of separation being a little bit more agrarian about it, but I think it helps us both.
You know, Barry, as a as an Orthodox, as an Eastern Orthodox believer, we've just lived through a 20th century nightmare in Eastern Europe, yes, in which you know, the state demonized religion, and the Soviet government became stripped of religion's civilizing influence, and as a result became the most intolerant political system and the most brutal and repressive regime in the history of mankind. I'm hearing from you, however, that that form of relationship between religion and government is not something that AU endorses at all. Am I correct?
No, I mean, I would be just as opposed if a government decided to try to teach kids in a public school that religion was a fiction, or to take some position that said God does not exist. I would be completely opposed to that. There was a public school teacher in California about 2 years ago who ridiculed a student in class for his Christian beliefs. We certainly sided with that student and approved of the final decision, where a court intervened, as courts, somebody has to be the final referee, the courts in this country are, said the teacher was out of line. And I agree with the courts who said that, because he was, in fact, out of line. In the same way, we think that when a Christian history teacher who happens to be a Christian starts bringing up biblical principles instead of constitutional ones in a history class, also a canon should be reprimanded for that. Government needs not to be hostile, as it was in the Soviet Union, but it needs to be strictly neutral about matters of faith and religion.
Barry, would you help myself and my listeners flesh out in our own minds kind of a vision for what would be the changes that would need to take place in the relationship between religion and government in America if Americans United had free rein? If you won every case that you took, like, what would the changes be?
Okay, a couple big changes. Number one, we would not approve, and this is the law currently, although the law is often breached and not enforced, we don't believe that you should endorse candidates for public office from the pulpits, or using monies from your church collected for religious purposes, charitable purposes, to use it to fund candidates. Unfortunately, some churches do that. 7 out of 10 Americans oppose it, and we do too, and we'd like to see that more rigorously enforced. We'd also like to make sure that there are not grants or contracts given between government and religious groups unless those religious groups are at least willing to hire the most qualified person for that so-called secular part of their program, that there be no religious preferences given. This is something that unfortunately is happening all over the country with tax money that comes from all of the people that ends up subsidizing some religious groups and not others. Finally, I think, Father Josiah, that the thing I'd like to see is that we don't have battles in public schools where majority religious faith believers, Christian students, for example, get special privileges that the minority doesn't. It's very difficult as an elementary or junior high or even high school student to fight against a coach who is a Christian imposing his or her views about prayer or when you should pray or how you should pray on all the students in an academic setting or in an athletic setting. So those are three things that would be changed. And I think the country would be better, and frankly, I think religion would be stronger as a result.
Could I ask you, Barry, some specific questions that I have in my mind? Would practical things – I have a hard time conceiving of this, the naked public square, or a neutral government as you're describing it without kind of these religious attachments. It's very hard for me to grasp, especially because religion is so much a part of our country's history. It's so enfleshed, and it doesn't just accept an easy compartmentalization. Would our cities that are named after Christian people and saints, would they have to change their names?
You know, I don't think that those items or things that have been around as long as the name of a city, for example, I don't think that the fight ought to be there. I think it ought to be in those arenas that I talked about where people are really made to feel like they don't belong, that they're a second-class citizen in their own community or in their own country because the government appears to prefer some religion or one particular religion like Christianity over all others and over the views of non-believers. You know, we have 2,000 different religions in this country. We have 20 to 25 million non-believers or humanists, free thinkers, atheists, agnostics, call themselves different things. But we're all in this together. And I think if we respect each other's views and not expect the government to promote, pat on our heads, bless some of us but not others, I think we'd be in a stronger position. Government does some things right. They do a lot of things, in my judgment, wrong. One thing they almost always end up getting wrong is working on religion and picking the best out of thousands of options.
Mm-hmm. Barry, can I ask you about the notion, the understanding, the specific interpretation of the church and state metaphor that AU uses? I'm familiar. I'm not a constitutional lawyer like yourself, so forgive me for my lack of nuance.
No problem.
But I'm familiar that phrase comes from a letter of Thomas Jefferson, our third president, to the Danbury, Connecticut Baptists, and that it's not, in fact, in the Constitution. And I know a little bit of history. I taught colonial history at the collegiate level for some time, and I remember that Thomas Jefferson himself supported the federal government financially supporting Christian missionaries to evangelize the natives, that he helped contribute from federal funds to the building of churches. Is it really the case that the notion of separation of church and state that AU embraces and is using as a foundation to make these kind of threats of litigation, and even you've been very successful in that, is it really true that that is authentic and that Thomas Jefferson would recognize what you're saying?
No, I think Thomas Jefferson would, and of course every side of every dispute known in modern history uses Jefferson. All you have to do is have an audience of Canadians and start passing around your favorite Thomas Jefferson quote on the right or the left, and they'll go, could you have, in fact, this did happen literally once in New York City, a big debate I had, and afterwards there's a gentleman from Canada, and he said, could you guys have a debate without both citing Thomas Jefferson? We said we thought we could, but we never got around to it. Jefferson, I think, was very clear. You know, he was not, in a traditional sense, in today's world at least, a traditional Christian. He did not believe that Jesus performed miracles. In fact, I was given over the holidays another copy of the Jefferson Bible, where he excludes those things from the Bible that he didn't think were, in fact, right, not only for government, but he didn't even think they were correct as a matter of understanding the life of Jesus. But having said all of that, Jefferson did do some things. For example, as you noted, was willing to spend government money out to proselytize native peoples here. But I have a feeling that was more under the hope that if you taught them about the Bible and you emphasized the passages where Jesus refers to not using force, for example, turning the other cheek, that the native people would not fight back against the colonialization of their culture. So I think there may have been a somewhat of a hidden agenda when we look back at why Jefferson did that. But also, we do have a changing culture. We have a culture now. Certainly in Jefferson's day, they knew about atheists, they knew about Muslims, they knew about Hindus. You find those references in early writings. But now we have an even more diverse country, where as a practical and a constitutional matter, I think we need to be very careful about giving support or the appearance of support, as a cross does, for example, in Riverside, California, that the government has embraced the central symbol and by extension, the central teachings of a particular faith. And I don't think it does the faith any good to have government embracing it, because the same government that can embrace it one day can turn on it another day, just as Hitler, of course, who claimed that he was a Christian himself and tried to lure the churches, Protestant and Catholic churches in Germany, onto his side of the argument those same churches found out that there's a heavy price to pay when you buy into this framework, an alternative framework of not separating church and state.
Barry, would you speak a little bit about our local Riverside situation here? Why is AU so concerned about the Mount Rubidoux cross here in Riverside to have sent a letter to our city council?
You know, we send many letters in any given month about a variety of conflicts where we believe that a government agency has violated someone's First Amendment rights. This was one of those letters. I should say that in about 7 out of 10 cases, the government body looks at our letters. They say these people want to avoid litigation, as we do. It's very expensive for everybody. And they will simply resolve it in a way that is constitutionally correct. In some cases, that doesn't happen. We file lawsuits. As you pointed out earlier, we generally win those court cases. It costs somebody a lot of money, including us a lot of time and money. We'd like to avoid it. And I think here, with this cross prominently displayed on what was a piece of property given to Riverside, California, by a private entity for the use as a park, he knew the guy who gave it had a cross there. There'd been a cross there since sometime in the early 1900s. This is a big steel and concrete cross. It is very prominent. I believe that it gives a sense to non-Christians in that community that the government has officially sanctioned Christianity or is promoting it. I think the cross, the central Christian symbol, the symbol of the death and resurrection of Jesus the Christ, as we who are Christians understand it, cannot and should not be dumbed down or explained away as some kind of historical relic. It's much more than that. And when governments treat it or lawyers try to explain that this is just history, I think they're missing the very heart of what Christian doctrine is all about.
You know, Barry, from the beginning of the cross's history here on Mount Rubidoux, it's been planted in honor of Father Junipero Serra, the great Franciscan missionary who started most of the missions here in California. And it's been called the Serra Cross. I know that in D.C., in the Capitol Rotunda, the very image that represents the state of California is a statue of Father Junipero in which he's holding a cross in his right hand. Is that not enough to document the fact that this cross is planted primarily for a historical reason that includes religion, but is historical?
Well, it is no doubt that there's some history connected to this, and that's not really in dispute. But the question, I think, is whether this prominently displayed cross now, I mean, when its predecessor was there, as I understand it, it was in honor of a particular individual. I'm correct about that, right? And he's the same individual who's in the Hall of Statuary in the United States Congress, chosen by some representative, I forget who, from the state of California to represent it here in Washington. But I think it stands for something quite different in its iteration in California. This was put there originally by a private party to celebrate what was overwhelmingly a religious figure, the founder of the mission, something that every child in California, they make models of the missions. They go and see those as part of legitimate history lessons, because there's no doubt that Roman Catholicism played a tremendous role in the history of California. I don't want to scrub history clean of all religion. I just want it to be genuinely religious, genuinely historical, if we're going to call it historical. Right over the Supreme Court, there are carvings of famous lawgivers. One of them is Moses. You can't read what's on the tablets, but if you know who Moses is, you probably get a general idea. It's the Ten Commandments. There's the Code of Hammurabi. There's a Asian philosopher. Everybody knows that that's just history. Nobody's trying to impose. In fact, I remember once on CNN saying to a guy, what's on those tablets? And he said, oh, I don't know. I don't have my contacts in. And I said, well, trust me, if you had your contacts in, you still wouldn't know, because It's not there to promote the Ten Commandments. It's there as an historical carving. But I think this cross represents then and now something different, and that the centrality of this message of Christian faith, represented by the cross, has such an overwhelming significance that it transcends any kind of historical add-ons, encrustrations, and I really think it ought to be on private property, or somebody ought to buy the property there that's now the park, and if they want to retain it as private citizens, to do so. I think that's the resolution of this that should come about. I suspect it will come about. I know that you and others in the community are offended by that idea, but I think in the long run, it's healthier for that cross to be in a sacred space, not in a government space.
Barry, I thank you most sincerely for making this time to answer my questions. And I'd like to close by just responding to that last suggestion, that very tangible, practical suggestion that you made, that the city consider selling it to a private party. If the city of Riverside decides not to endure the threat of potential litigation from Americans United, if the city of Riverside decides to try to take some action to sell it to a private party, if a private entity buys the cross with a resolve to maintain the cross, will Americans United legally dispute that land transfer?
As long as the land transfer is done in a fair and honorable fashion, as long as it is open to anyone to bid, if the winner happens to be somebody who wanted from the first get-go or wants to continue once owning the land to maintain the crosses on private property, that is a part of the free exercise of religion. My only complaint is that it is the government that now appears to be and is in fact sponsoring this cross. If it was a private party and somebody didn't like it, well, there are a lot of things people don't like in this world, and we put up with it. But we should not, as American citizens, have to put up with the endorsement or apparent endorsement of particular religious beliefs of any kind by government or government officials.
100 thank yous, Barry.
Thank you very much. Pleasure talking to you again.
My pleasure. Take care.
So I thank you for listening to these two interviews. And before I let you go, I would like simply to suggest a few contours of a proper response by citizens of our city of Riverside. What can we do? How can we encourage our esteemed mayor and our city council, fine people dedicated to the city who don't want Mount Rubidoux to be molested and don't want the Sarah Cross to have to come down, but are faced with a quandary? What can we encourage them to do? Let me suggest a few things. First, I think it's a time for us to express our sincere respect and support for our city officials. It's clear to everyone who's observing this that they are people of integrity who have a commitment to our city and find this confrontation unfortunate. As a member of the faith community of Riverside, I and my brother clergy wish to express the concord that we have as leaders in the faith community in this city. We would like the city of Riverside to seriously consider not responding to the unwarranted complaint of Americans United for the separation of church and state. We would urge, I believe, the council to consider not only what is the path of least resistance, but also what is the path of an integrity and an honor worthy of the city of Riverside. We have to remember, all of us who live here, that the decision that we make is not just as municipal citizens, it's not just as Riversideans, but also as Americans. And what's going on, this controversy between the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State and their purely secularist understanding of the public square, their desire to remove all religious symbology from the public square. This is a national controversy. You heard Barry Lynn in the interviews specifically say that this is something that is erupting all over the country, and AU is very aggressively promoting these types of conflicts. If we just consent and take the decision that will make it easiest for Riverside to avoid discomfort, are we really acting as responsible Americans, or are we contributing to the strength by of AU by establishing another historical precedent where they can get their will done and alter the face of the public square, removing precious theistic symbols that have long stood in our public places. I would also note that American United complaint against our city's historical practice in preserving the Sarah Cross is a greater nationwide attempt to keep faith communities from participating in public spaces because of the content of our beliefs. And these attempts are out of accord with the sympathies of our own citizens. We remind our city also of the near unanimous support it has among its constituency to preserve the cross. Anyone attending the public meetings hosted by our city will see that maybe we have one or two who are willing even to speak in our city and ask for the cross to be removed. It would be a great sadness if we lent further credibility to the influence of this organization by conceding to its complaint. We would also note that Americans United sent simply a form letter complaint that did not actually threaten to sue the city, and it was written to us without a knowledge of the historical importance of Mount Rubidoux and of Frank Miller, and of the nature of the agreement between the Miller family and the city of Riverside, since when that mountain was given by the city, to the city rather, by the Miller family, there was a covenant. Riverside promised to maintain that cross, and we ought encourage those who govern our city now to be faithful to that promise. If, in fact, the city agrees to sell a portion of Mount Rubidoux, including the Sarah Cross, while that would be a most unfortunate decision, and a wrong decision, I believe, we should ask the city not to sell the portion of Mount Rubidoux containing the cross through blind auction or through sealed bid, because neither of these forms of land transfer can guarantee the preservation of the cross. And these are gratuitous affirmations by Americans United, suggesting that this is the only constitutional way to sell the cross. This is yet another affirmation of AU that we ought not listen to. Rather, we would request that if the city is going to sell the land, that the city execute a negotiated bid with a clear and specific covenant guaranteeing the preservation of the Sarah Cross in perpetuity. These are just some of the thoughts in my own mind. I'm desirous to be corrected if I'm in error, but I would suggest to you, listener, that this is something that you can encourage our dear mayor and esteemed council to consider when they go to make a decision on what to do with the Sarah Cross and with the top of Mount Rubidoux. Thanks for listening.
We hope that you have enjoyed and have been edified by this presentation offered to you by Patristic Nectar Publications, a nonprofit organization committed to nourishing the spiritually thirsty with the sweet teachings of the Holy Fathers. If you are interested in other available titles, or if you would like more information on Patristic Nectar Publications, please visit our website at www.patristicnectar.org. Again, that's www.patristicnectar.org.